All right, welcome to Lectionary at Lunch. We are on the epistle lesson for the second Sunday in Lent, which is Romans chapter 8, verses 1 through 8, and then Romans chapter verses 13 through 17 of that same chapter. And as you will recall, we are in Paul's great argument in which he is defending and explaining and proclaiming justification by faith apart from the works of the law. That argument started at chapter 1, verse 18, in which Paul states that the wrath of God has been revealed against all the unrighteousness of men. His argument throughout that section is that all have sinned and the law cannot save them. The kind of summary or climax from chapter 1, verse 18 through 3, verse 20 is given in verse 20. 19 and 20, but especially 20, where he says, "Therefore, by the deeds of the law, no flesh will be justified in his sight, for by the law is the knowledge of sin." So from there, you have the kind of fulcrum of his argument, and it turns at 3 verse 21, "But now the righteousness of God apart from the law is revealed, being witnessed by the law and the prophets." And so now he is going to talk about this righteousness of God that comes apart from the law. And so notice then that as he talks about the righteousness of God, he's not talking about it as a character or an attribute of God, but as a word of salvation that God gives us. So he uses words like righteousness, salvation, redemption, all within the same ballpark of meaning for something that God graciously gives us apart from the law. And he goes on to explain then that it is witnessed by law, the law and the prophets. And that brings us to chapter 4, because here we see that he cites Abraham as a great Old Testament example of someone who was justified by faith. And so it is a central piece of his argument throughout this section of the book. Now he's going to show from the Old Testament how the righteousness of God apart from the law was already operative and revealed already in the Old Testament. And so we read, beginning at verse 1 of chapter 4. "What then will we say? Erumen is from, of course, lego. It's a first plural future active indicative. What then will we say? And what follows is this accusative infinitive construction after a verb of speech. What then will we say that Abraham found? Hure kenai is a perfect active infinitive from hurisko. What will we say that Abraham, our forefather, found?" The katasarka at the end of that verse goes with Abraham, our forefather. So then, what then will we say that Abraham, our forefather, according to the flesh, found? Okay. Verse 2 then. "For if Abraham, ek ergon, from works," we would say the ek here functions and probably means something like by reason of or as a result of. So, "For if Abraham, by reason of or because of works, edikai othe, was justified, he has a kauchema, he has a boast, but not but not before God." All right. So notice how Paul is setting up his argument here about how Abraham was saved, how he was justified. Verse 3, loosely connected with agar, tigar, "For what does the scriptures say?" Lege. And here he quotes from Genesis 15, verse 6, a great passage. "But Abraham, epistusen, believed God." Notice that pistuo commonly takes the dative, although there are prepositions that it can be used with, and sometimes the accusative as well, but here's the dative. "But Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him," or counted to him. Elogisthe is a third singular aorist passive indicative from logizomai, to reckon. Okay, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him eistikaiosine, as righteousness or for righteousness. Here you see this construction eistikaiosine. It follows what is common in Hebrew for an apposition. Remember, when you want something in apposition in Hebrew, you use a lamed with it. So here you'll see this in a number of places, a couple times here in our reading actually as well. So it's kind of a structure of apposition, or kind of a predicate nominative, you could say. And Wallace actually characterizes it as that. So Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Namely, his faith is reckoned to him as righteousness. Okay. Verse 4 then, but to the one who works, ergazomeno, again, this is a present middle participle, means to work, and notice it's used as a substantive here. But to one who works, the reward is not reckoned, logizetai, is not reckoned according to grace, but according to debt. Okay, it's just a common general truth that Paul gives here. All right, now verse 5, but to the one who does not work, okay, ergazomenai, pistuante is again a present active indicative participle dative. All right, and notice that here the object of it is preceded by the epi, not the dative. So you would translate, but to the one not working, but believing in or on the one who justifies, dikaiunte, the one who justifies the ungodly, his faith, he pistis autu, is reckoned, logizetai, as righteousness. Here you have the same kind of construction with the eis dikaiosine. So once again, starting from verse 4, but to the one who works, the reward is not reckoned in according with grace, but according to debt. But to the one who does not work, but believes, again dative, one who believes on the one who justifies the ungodly, his faith is reckoned as righteousness. Now notice the kind of statement that Paul situates here, that a person is ungodly, is justified. And here he seems to be referring to Abraham, so that he's kind of saying that Abraham, when he was ungodly, was justified. And that prepares for another move that Paul's going to make in chapter 5, in which he moves from not only talking about justification by faith, but to universal grace or universal justification. He does that in clearer language and with a different analogy when we get to chapter 5. Okay? So moving on to verse 6, kath aper, just as kai David, even David, lege. Here it would have it's easiest taken in English as David talks about. Right? So just as also David talks about the makarisman, the blessedness of the man to whom God, logizetai, reckons righteousness apart from works. So it's very interesting, as you can kind of think about and look at how Paul uses the Old Testament. He goes from the Torah, from this prime example of Abraham and the story of Abraham. Now he goes to the Psalms, quoting from Psalm 31, and goes to David as another example of this justification by faith teaching that he wants to proclaim. So again, just as also David talks about the blessedness of the man to whom God reckons righteousness apart from works. Then he quotes the Psalm, Makarioi, blessed. Now, hon is the whose, okay, pronoun. And notice that it's hi anamiai, the sin, the sins or the iniquities. It's the subject of the verb. The verb, af ethason, is from af hi'emi, and it is a third plural aorist passive indicative, to forgive. So notice, since it's aorist passive, it's to be forgiven. The iniquities were forgiven. So putting the whole thing together, it would be blessed are those, see, supply the verb, whose iniquities are forgiven. See, or more woodenly, the iniquities of whom are forgiven. And again, you see the repetition, the same kind of construction in the next line, and whose hamartiai, whose sins, epikalipthason, and whose sins are covered. This is from epikalipto, third plural, aorist passive indicative, means to cover. All right? And then he follows up with the next verse. Blessed is the man, all right, who or whose sin the Lord does not impute or reckon, logisthai. Notice that that's kind of a key word throughout this section, that law, gizomai. All right, notice then the construction, u me logisetai. First of all, you have the double negative. And then you have the subjunctive. Third singular aorist middle subjunctive is logisetai. Again, an aorist subjunctive. And this construction with the u me is an emphatic negation, so that the construction denies or rules out even the idea of the opposite being a possibility. So some suggest you translate, blessed is the man whose sin the Lord will not at all count. All right. Notice then that the verse serves Paul's purpose as well, because David is talking about a blessing that's quite apart from himself or from anything he has done, and that's that blessing of forgiveness. And so notice he's talking about it as this free gift and not as something that is earned. And so it's important now that you see how Paul kind of has these two primary examples from the Old Testament of a righteousness that comes from God apart from the law. All right. That ends this first section, and now the pericope wants us to go on to verse 13. In between, remember, Paul makes the case that Abraham is justified before he was circumcised, so he can't even claim that as one of the reasons. But then we skip to verse 13 and continue with the argument. And we have this, for not through law was the promise to Abraham or to his seed. So again, for not through the law, you have to supply a verb, was the promise to Abraham or to his seed. Notice the next construction is an accusative infinitive construction. And here the reason is that this construction actually stands in opposition to the noun. Namely, it specifies what the promise is or categorizes the promise a little more closely. So in English, you could actually translate and add a namely in there like this. For not through the law was the promise to Abraham or to his seed, namely that he would be the heir of the world. All right? Notice that the pronoun is the subject of the verb, given that the preceding word has an article in front of it. So the auton, when you see this kind of construction, would be the subject. So again, for not through the law was the promise to Abraham or to his seed, namely, it's going to specify the promise, that he would be the heir of the world, but through the righteousness that comes, it's literally or woodenly the righteousness of faith, but notice we would say the righteousness that comes by faith, as some translations have it. So it's the faith that grasps hold of and brings God's righteousness to the sinner apart from law. All right? Verse 14 then, he continues his argument. For if those from law, we would say those who are of the law, or those maybe some translations even have, for those who are under the law, are heirs, kekenotai hepistis, the promise has become empty. This is from kenao, and it's a third singular perfect middle indicative. And kat ergetai is the same kind of word. It's from kat argeo, third singular perfect middle indicative. And that means to be nullified. So for if those of the law or under the law are heirs, the faith has become empty and the promise has become nullified, null and void. All right. Now what you see in verse 15 is a little parenthesis, and Paul loves to do this in his arguments. When you read from chapter 1 on, you'll see that he has parentheses and little digressions from the main line of his argument that sometimes make it difficult for us to follow. But nevertheless, notice he has, and they actually kind of set up larger discussion later on. So his little digression in verse 15 will be taken up later. I believe it's when we get to chapter 5. Chapter 5, when he talks about the power of sin holding even before the Mosaic Law is given. So verse 15, for the law works, kat ergazetai, for the law works wrath. Again, this is from kat ergazomai, simple present, middle indicative, third singular. For the law works wrath. But where, here's the adverb, the u, who means where, adverbially, but where not is law, neither is there parabasis, neither is there transgression. So what he's saying is, here, what he drops in this little parentheses is that sin, and what he wants to say, what's in the background, is sin still acts as a power. Sin still brings death, as we will see in chapter 5. But where there is no law, it hasn't reached the character of transgression, of the actual transgressing of the law. And part of the argument is that when the law comes, the law actually works or incites a person to rebel against it. So the law, rather than saving you, just stirs up the evil passions even more. And that's part of the later argument that he just briefly glimpses here in verse 15. Okay, then we get on to 16. Diatuto, because of this, or we could say therefore, it is of faith, or from faith, by reason of faith, so that, all right, it might be according to grace, okay, hinna, supply the verb, so it might be according to grace. Ace ta, here again you have a nice result clause, accusative infinitive construction once again, ace ta, so that firm might be the promise to all the seed, okay? To all the seed, not only to the one who is of the law. And we might want to notice the one kind of stands for everybody here. And so in English, it makes it a little easier if you make it plural descendants. So you could, you know, in very smooth English translate, so that firm is the promise to all descendants, not only those who are of the law or under the law only, but also to those who are of the faith of Abraham. But again, more strictly following Greek, you could make those singular. Okay, who is the father of us all? So once again, verse 16, because of this, it is of faith, so that it might be according to grace, so that the promise might be firm for everyone who for all the seed, not only for the one who is from the law, but also to the one who is from or of or has the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. Verse 17, here's another parenthesis. Just as it is written, Hati Patera, the father of many nations, Tetheka, I have put you. That's from Tithemi, again, a perfect. First person, indicative, active. So just as it is written, the father of many nations, I have put you. Okay. Now, with that little parenthesis, we're back on track again with the kat enanti hu pistusin theu. This is a little difficult, so let me see if I can explain this. The best way to explain it is to remember that pistuo takes a dative case. And so what you, and kat enanti usually takes a genitive, all right? What you have here is an instance of incorporation of the antecedent theu into the relative clause. So the who there actually refers to theu. So without confusing you too much, if you just put theu after kat enanti, you could translate before God, and then Instead of the genitive who, have the dative ho there, before God in whom he believed. All right. So really this phrase, what you see here, is equivalent to a phrase that goes kat enanti theou ha, or I'm sorry, ho epistousen. Okay. So again, just as it is written, the father of many nations I have put you in the presence of God in whom he believed, and namely now God, the one who zoa poiuntas, the one who makes alive the dead, and the one who calls the things not existing as if they exist. Notice this last phrase. I'm understanding this hos as a comparative in a present sense, so that he's comparing what looks to be present reality with what is not yet a present reality. So in other words, God is the one who raises the dead and the one who calls things that do not yet exist as though they already exist. Okay, that's that with the onta and onta. So again, who calls the things that do not yet exist as if they already exist. In other words, God speaks with such assurance that many nations will descend from Abraham. It's as though that already exists, or as though that's already happening. Okay, very good. One more verse then. I'm sorry, that ends our text for today. So it only takes us through verse 17, and we are finished. All right, thank you very much.